Hi, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And today, I have a special wonderful treat for you. The beloved, beautiful, precious, dear, internationally acclaimed animal communicator, creator of the Anaflora Essences for Animals, minister, and queen of the fairies. That is my best description of you, Sharon. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Iris. Boy, this is a good time of year to be queen of the fairies and the flowers.
It is, isn't it? Your time, my darling.
It is. Well, it's just beginning here in the mountains. So all the precious little plants and flowers are just beginning to poke through.
You're getting daffodils and tulips and things now?
Just beginning.
Just beginning?
Just beginning.
I might come visit there.
I think that's a good idea.
Because, you know, the spring starts here right after Christmas.
I know, it's so amazing when I come down to visit you how beautiful and warm it is with all the flowers out, and we usually have lots of snow then.
You do. And it's scary to me. I am ready to be over winter December 26th. Sharon, you know what I was thinking about you today? I know we want to talk about motherhood.
Yes.
And motherhood in animals and what that teaches us, and invite other people to share animal motherhood stories. And I also wanted to say about you, I think the reason that you help people so much, like I know that you deal with a lot of people who are grieving because their animals are dying.
Yes.
And you worked with a friend of a friend the other day, and she had been carrying this little dog around with her, with a baby pouch against her heart.
Oh, they were just so precious, both of them.
I know, and she was in such deep grief, and you helped her so much. And I was thinking about the reason that is that you don't regard animals as, or people as, any different when they're in or out of their body.
I don't at all, and I think it's you know, it's interesting. When I began my work as an animal communicator years ago, I didn't have quite the confidence just to let the animals speak right away directly. I had a little more of a kind of format to the sessions that I would do.
That made you feel safer about doing something so way out.
So way out there, yes. And also I think from the feeling that even the clients would think it was so way out. But what I've found over the years is if I just allowed the animal to begin speaking, you know, as soon as the person answers the phone, like with the woman we were speaking about, right away, it's so disarming to the person that the animal, even if it's died and gone on into the heavenly dimensions, can communicate just like it always has. Then it just, you know, a lot of the grief is lifted right there into a kind of state of wonder, which goes right along with your theme, Miracles Happen. And I really do believe with all my heart that there's absolutely no difference between animals and people and other forms of life, that the bodies that we have really are just costumes that we wear while we're visiting here. So actually, in many ways, animals can communicate sometimes more clearly after they've left the body because we're not viewing them in a specific way. And I also, I just love the theme today that for Mother's Day, you know, speaking about motherhood, what wonderful mothers animals are. But also, I'd like to put a little twist on that at some point in our conversation because I also feel that animals are our animal companions are often doing such a fantastic job of mothering us. You know, I mean, we care for them and we think of ourselves as their moms and that's a beautiful thing. But the other half of it is how often I hear from people and how often in my own life the animals have been our mothers and easily take that role. And, you know, I think first of all of my kitty Lily, who's 23 years old, and she came into my life when I was just on the threshold of becoming very, very sick, and I didn't really know quite how ill I was going to be. And she was born feral behind my house and on her own decided to climb this long stairway behind my house and come up and come into the house as scared as she was and be my friend. And really for an entire year, I became sicker and sicker and I wasn't so able to care for her because I was very incapacitated myself, but she became braver and braver and over time allowed me to touch her and then got to the point where she would sleep on my bed with me and I was really literally bedridden for most of a year. And she really sat and sat and sat there and there were days when I wasn't even able to get up and feed her. But just like the greatest of mothers, she never left my side. And when I was in pain, she would lie on my body and absorb the pain. And if I would cry, she would kiss away my tears. And in so many ways, I think of her as a tremendous example of motherhood and what that means. And now she's very elderly, and it's kind of turned around again, and I'm mothering her a little more now because she needs my care. But so many incredible stories that I have heard over the years of ways in which animals mother and take care of people. And I've always really thought of animals as a really great ministry on earth because each species of animals, whether it's a dog or cat or rabbit or a wild animal, they each have a unique way that they minister to us and minister to the earth. And I think motherhood and ministry are very closely related because the word minister means to care for, to give care and aid, and being a mother means to care for another. And it's just, to me, it's amazing all of the ways that not only the animals mother us and minister to us by absorbing our emotional states or our illnesses, but also the way that all of the different species of animals mother the earth. You know, we think of the earth as the mother being, and that's certainly true, but there's also a way that all of the wild animals, the elephants and giraffes and hippopotamuses and all the different animals, they minister to the earth and mother the earth by holding a certain frequency and replenishing the earth as they walk on the earth's surface and go about their daily business. So I think that the magical thing about motherhood and mothering is that in the highest sense, we would all be doing that for each other all the time, you know, mothering each other, mothering the earth, mothering the animals, the plants. The plants minister to us and mother us by giving us their substances that we can take into our bodies to make ourselves better. And the animals minister to us, and if we're awake enough, we mother them, and it's just, I think the whole idea of motherhood is such a beautiful thing. And also, I think that everyone should take the role of mother. It doesn't mean that you have to have your own children either, even. I mean, I feel that, like, my work largely has to do with mothering animals and mothering people. And even in your life, Iris, when I observe you, I mean, so often you are offering people a kind of mothering or care that they may not even get from their own living mother, or maybe they don't have a mother, or they're estranged from their mother. So I think motherhood is just a role that we can fulfill for each other that's just so glorious and wonderful.
Thank you, Sharon.
And I'm sure with your kitty gang that with all of the different challenges you've been through in your life too, that the kitties and the bunnies have taken such good care of you.
They do, you know.
They do. They know just what to do, don't they?
All of them.
Mm-hmm.
They take turns cuddling me.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah. You know, I would like to work with something kind of universal and also personal to me.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to talk more about this, that Lily doesn't kill birds.
No. Which is actually really extraordinary in her case because, as I said, she was born feral, and when she came to me, she was probably 10 weeks old or so. So she had really spent, 10 weeks of her life living out in the alley and the field behind my house. And I know her mother taught her to hunt because I knew the mother cat and I knew Lily's siblings from watching them out of my window. And so they learned to hunt at a very early age. And when Lily came to me, she still had a very strong hunting instinct. But, you know, within 2 years' time, she completely reverted to being absolutely compassionate to other animals. And really, largely, it was because I allowed her to feel how devastated I was when she harmed something. And really, little by little, she turned her attention to me and to my feelings about the other animals and developed this incredible compassion herself. I mean, to the point where in recent years, not so much now because she's quite elderly, but when she was healthier and younger, I could watch her out the window of my office and she'd be out on the lawn, and you know how they get down and when they see a bird and they do that kind of body twitchy thing and make those little noises. And
yeah,
she would go through that whole routine. And then I could literally see her catch herself, and she would stop and come into the office and jump up on my desk and watch the birds through the window. So I really believe that we can teach animals compassion towards other animals, and that it may not be 100% possible in every case, because I think animals, just like people, have varying degrees or varying capacities for compassion because we're all on different levels of learning and understanding. But when I think of all the clients I've had over the years, you know, many of them have been able to teach their cats not to kill birds and mice.
Well,
and the best way to do that really is just to open your heart to your animal companion and let them know what you feel when you see a little creature killed. And because they want to please us so much, if to the best of their ability, they will turn towards compassion too.
Well, you know, I don't feel like Venus, the little Venusian,
yes,
wants to please me. She wants to be her wild self, is what it feels like. And
that's true sometimes.
And she's, and I have really told her, that's not going to cut it. I've just drawn the line. That's not going to cut it around here to keep killing birds. And
mm-hmm.
she's done like 3 in 2 weeks.
Well, you know, one interesting thing, too, Iris, I mean, you animals, particularly our animal companions or even sometimes wild animals that come into our yards on a regular basis, like everything else in the outer world, they're always mirroring something for us. And very, very often when people think of mirroring, they think, well, if I'm compassionate or I'm a vegetarian or I don't like to harm things, then I'm going to draw to myself animals that are like I am, and that's how mirroring works. But actually mirroring can work different ways. And, you know, sometimes as an example, animals will come into our life to get us to kind of loosen up about something. Like I've had situations where, you know, maybe a person that's a real strict vegan, I mean, to the point of, you know, examining every ingredient.
Like Sunny.
Everything they eat. And so they suddenly bring a little kitten home, and they think, oh, this kitten is going to be so wonderful, and it's going to be just like me. And they find that they end up with a cat that's, you know, dragging something through the cat door every day and massacring it in some bloody way in the middle of the carpet.
Torturing it first.
And so sometimes what the animal is trying to teach us is a kind of balance, and it doesn't mean that killing is right, but it might be, you know, in some people's lives, it might be an attempt to create balance. And sometimes the message is really that the animal needs to go to live somewhere where that's appropriate, or an environment where that's appropriate.
Well, I've been wondering about that because I know, you know, her mother I placed with someone because she, the other cat started picking on her.
Yes, I remember.
And I really got, when I meditated on it, that she was the queen of everything, and they felt that she wasn't like a team player.
Right.
And she got to go to a home where she is the queen of everything. I mean everything.
Right.
It's like the whole house operates around her.
Well, you know, that's actually a really important point for people too, Iris, because, you know, you and I are very firm about people being totally and completely responsible for their animal companions and, you know, making a commitment to them for life. But sometimes the kindest thing we can do for an animal is to let it go to another home when another home is more appropriate, and especially if we know ahead of time that the home they're going to is going to be loving and the person that's going to take them is going to take full responsibility for them. So like so many other situations in life, sometimes the most loving thing to do is to let go.
Well, that is what I was going to say. Also, she is a major huntress.
Yes, she is. Exudes from her.
and she went to a home where they think it's perfectly all right for her to slaughter the birds. In fact, they think it's funny that she hides in this particular place, and it's just a match made in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like I was horrified, and they don't care.
Right. Right.
So, but to me, the bird baby has a mother, too.
That's right.
And that mother has as much right to expect her children to grow up, be free, be happy, be healthy, have everything it needs, friends, love, fulfillment, feeling. See, I know so many animals that are on a mission, specifically on a mission.
Yes.
And they have a right to that, too.
That's
we have
right.
no right to mess with their mission.
That's really important. It's absolutely true that they have as much of an individual purpose as we do. And, you know, sometimes animals actually come through us in a way, not to us. I mean, sometimes we, right away, like when you got Treasurous, you knew that he was yours for keeps and he would be there. But also, sometimes there are animals that we're just meant to take for a period of time and then to pass them on when we can no longer provide them with what they need or tolerate what it is they need to do. So it could very well be that Nusi needs to move along to a place like that where her behaviors are more accepted or tolerated.
Well, I want my cats to be gentle and respect life, and I don't feel like she wants to do that.
Well, you're right about that. I know her well enough to know she does think she's queen of the universe, and she's going to do her own thing. Whereas with Lily, and you know, it's not a kind of wrong right comparison because each individual is just doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. But with Lily, I was able, even when she was a youngster, to really give her a little talk if she would kill something or hurt something, to really give her a little talk about how that little mouse may have been a mother or had a mother that missed it. And she would really pay attention and take that deeply in, and she could feel, because she had been born in the wild herself, how awful it would be to lose a mother. But with Nusi, you know, it could change, but right now it's like she's just not going to listen to those kind of stories.
She does not care.
She doesn't care. She's going to do her own thing.
And humans can just step aside.
Yes.
Well, is that what she's showing me, that it would be better for her to be in another place?
I think it's moving in that direction because your life is changing in a lot of ways. And, you know, sometimes when our lives begin to change, then the animals become a little more firm about whatever path they're holding, you know, whether that's their bond with us or their desire to go on to something else. I would say with Nusi, it might be worthwhile working with a little longer because, you know, things can always change. But it might be that it is appropriate for her to move on. And she's so gorgeous, I can't imagine that there wouldn't be people lined up to have her.
Well, she's half Persian and half wild, feral, bad boy tomcat. Her mother has an unfortunate penchant for tomcats, and I was taking her to get her fixed, and I picked her up and realized she was pregnant,
mm-hmm.
and she begged me with her whole being, you know, I'm going to have these babies.
Right.
And so I let her have the babies and had all of them fixed and got two of them home. And at the other two I have had, but I've also felt a little, although I've loved them totally, I've felt a little neutral about them, sort of as if they were just passing through. I can't
mm-hmm.
explain it more than that.
No, I understand that completely because in the past when I had more animals, I had a lot that were like that too, that it was like they were just passing through or sharing space with me rather than being an intimate companion. And like you, I went through a time in my life where I would have, you know, six or seven cats at once, and they were definitely all doing very different things.
Well, it's not that I mean to. It just
happens that way.
Well, it's literally they follow me home, or I'll be innocently walking by and they reach out a paw.
Yes.
They do.
I've seen that happen with you.
You have, haven't you?
I have, yes.
And you know who called me to the pound that day? A dog that I used to have named Bingo, a big black dog. And I felt that he had reincarnated, you know, and was at the shelter in Mount Shasta. And I also felt it was a female dog this time and looked sort of the same. And I called up the pound and they said, yes, we have that dog. And when we got there, you went with me, when we got there, the dog had just gotten a home and was gone.
Right.
And there was treasure.
Yes.
And you said to me, here's the real reason you came.
And this beautiful little kitty named Treasure, beautiful white, blue-eyed cat, reached out of this cage and latched right onto Iris.
He did, didn't he?
He did.
There wasn't any question.
There was no question, no options. He had a hold of you.
And you, too, as I
and
remember.
And me, too, yes.
Well, I wanted to go back to the motherhood thing. One of the things that made a real impression on me and got me thinking more about animal testing in mice.
Yes.
Because mice are sort of considered by the general populace as vermin, as having no value,
right,
and only as a laboratory test animal because, that thing that justifies that the belief that an animal doesn't have a soul.
Right.
It's not even a belief. It's just a justification.
It is just a justification.
This isn't a child of God.
Right.
And so I was gardening one day, and I was sort of raking a place to start new seeds and stuff, and all of a sudden this little mouse, and I've told this story before, but it was such a shock to me. This little mouse comes out and she's like shaking her fist and yelling at me and just standing on her hind legs and just cussing me out. Just letting me have it. I have never been told off so roundly. And while she was doing that, she was running back and forth under the fence, relocating her babies out of my way. And she had five babies under the fence in under 30 seconds and cussed at me the whole time. And I thought, what a mom.
Exactly.
It was more than David and Goliath, you know?
Right.
And here I had this big old rake, too. She's like, up yours, lady. Step away from the children.
Yes.
And how can anybody not see the glory of that motherhood and respect that and honor that and let her children grow up?
Of course.
And the other thing that I see is that which there has been a lot of has just been not valued at all. Like there's so many mice, so they're not valuable.
Right.
And yet there's people that have pet mice and rats and really love them.
Oh, I had, when I was a kid, a pre-teenager, I had a wonderful white rat named Ruby. She was white with red eyes, and she
Ruby.
Was just my dearest friend. I used to carry her around everywhere. She would sit in my pocket, and she would climb up on my shoulder, and she'd be under the collar of my shirt and hiding under my hair. And of course, being I think I was 12 years old probably when she died, I used to really delight in taking her into stores and having people suddenly see her and scream. But she was really just the most wonderful, darling, precious friend ever.
Wow.
I just adored her.
Wow. Ruby.
Ruby. She was just absolutely wonderful.
Well, you know, I am, the more I pay attention to animals, the more I am convinced they are all just absolutely wonderful.
They are.
And we just haven't, you know, it's more than not stopping to smell the flowers. We just haven't taken a look.
I know. I mean, each species of animal is so beautiful, like all the different kinds of flowers, but also each of them, I mean, each species, but each individual, they have such incredible gifts to give us. And, you know, for the most part, we're missing it. We're missing the gift that they have.
Well, you know, it seems to me like most people are spending most of their time worrying.
This is true.
So it's hard to see the life, the beauty, the love that is really around you when you're worrying or beating yourself up.
Right. It's true. And, you know, Iris, that's an interesting comment, because in a lot of the sessions that I do, you know, people usually call me because they have some concern about their animal, either a behavior or an illness or something. But for the most part, animals right away, when I begin to communicate with them, have a lot of concern about the worrying that their person does. And they'll almost always ask me, well, why does she worry so much? Why does she lie in bed at night and cry or not sleep? Because animals, even though sometimes when they live with us, they can catch worry from us, for the most part, in their natural state, or if we're not imposing our worry on them, they just live totally in the joy of the moment. And we can learn so much from that, just from watching them, and like watching how beautiful your treasurer and Daphne are together. I mean, it's just a joy to watch.
It is, isn't it?
Totally and completely.
They just so love each other and clean each other and go over and wake the other one up when they're taking a nap.
Right.
They're so cute together. I just adore them.
Well, I was also thinking, too, Iris, when we were talking about the little mouse that you uncovered when you were raking, I was visiting with Marlies Jermutis, who's been on your program before, and she was telling a story about her. She has lots of deer that visit her yard that are very, very friendly. She's really befriended them all. She can touch them, feed them by hand.
I have a picture of you with your arm around a doe.
You do, I know. And Marlies said that last summer, one of the does, I think it was Ava, but I'm not sure, either Ava or Lisa, had triplet fawns. And she had them right on the perimeter of Marlies's yard. And so her instinct was when the doe came to eat, she would place the little babies in the bushes and tell them to stay, each in a different place. Because if each baby's in a different place, then if a predator comes or something, it wouldn't get all of them, so they'll spread them out. But Marlies had gone out and gone over to one of the little baby fawns and just crouched down to take a look at it. And she said all of a sudden she heard this galloping sound, and the dough was running over to her with such force. Marlies said it was just terrifying for a minute. But then Marlies said to the dough, "Oh, Lisa, it's me." And then the dough stopped and recognized Marlies, but she was really, the dough was going to defend that baby to the death. I mean, they are just such incredibly good mothers. There's nothing they won't do for their children.
That's so wonderful.
And one of the most beautiful sights in the world is the little baby deer. If any of our listeners have ever had a chance to see them just a few days after they're born or even a few hours when they're just learning how to use those little legs, they're just so darling.
I've seen hardened hunters melted by fawns.
Yes.
But if they forget they were fawns once they're grown up, you had a chance to grow up. Shoot them. I don't understand the reasoning there, Sharon. I don't understand it at all. What is it in your experience?
For hunting?
Yeah.
Well, I don't really have any people that hunt in my direct experience, although living here in Mount Shasta, there's still a lot of people that do hunt, but I don't even know what to make of it myself. I mean, I think it's something that people must learn from the time they're children, you know, that they, when they see a beautiful animal, rather than connecting with the beauty, it's like they see a target on it or something. But it just always strikes me as a really primitive behavior, like something that we should...
A throwback.
A throwback, like we should have done away with that long ago. And there was some famous person, I can't remember whether it was... might have been George Bernard Shaw or someone like that, who said that they felt that... that we would one day stop hunting and eating animals, and it would be considered just as horrible as killing and eating other people.
Cannibalism. Yeah.
And to me, it is cannibalism because the animals are our brothers and sisters.
But it's more than that. It's running a 24-hour worldwide concentration camp.
It is.
And we know full well the horror of that for humans. And, you know, for me, when I saw Planet of the Apes, that really opened my eyes further to how animals feel. And I promised to get Treasure neutered.
Yeah.
And he's just a real delicate cat.
He's very delicate.
And I don't really want to do it, and I keep thinking, and I have an appointment for him, and I keep thinking that he may feel like Charlton Heston felt in Planet of the Apes, you know, where they kept the humans in a cage,
mm-hmm.
and the humans were the ones that couldn't talk. And,
right.
And they neutered them at will, and... never mind that Charlton Heston had a girlfriend, you know. And I want to hear what you have to say about that, and I'd like to hear what Treasure has to say about it, because I feel worried.
Mm-hmm. Well, Treasure, just to get to the specifics, Treasure feels that being neutered is okay. He feels that the timing is important. Because he goes through, as you and I both know well from observing him, he goes through days where he's stronger and days where he's more delicate. And what Treasure says to me is it might drive the veterinarian crazy, but he says it needs to be done on a day when he's feeling strong.
Well, I have it set up for Wednesday.
He actually says he thinks he'll be feeling strong on Wednesday. That's day after tomorrow. He seems to know that.
Yeah. Well.
And he wants us to sit and meditate with him while it's happening.
Okay. Well, he's coming at 11 o'clock. And I told Brent how delicate he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I just...
Well, I think this is, you know, this is a kind of important issue, too, for Mother's Day, because, you know, one of the things that it's very important for people to understand, if you have an animal, dog or cat, male or female, and you're having them spayed or neutered, one of the most valuable things that you can do that will help the animal both stay connected and grounded in its body during the surgery and to recover quickly afterwards is to sit and meditate while the operation is taking place, because so many people have kind of been trained just to, they'll just take the animal into the veterinarian's office, drop it off, go do their shopping, and come back later. And it's actually very, very important to sit and meditate with the animal during the surgery. And for people, at least in my experience with my own clients that have done that, nothing ever goes wrong, because the animal retains their connection with you. They're grounded to their body. They recover really quickly once the surgery is over, and they get better within days. So it's a real important thing to do. And I think that the whole spay and neuter process can be an incredibly sacred thing, because to me, a sacred relationship with an animal is the same as a sacred relationship with another person. And, you know, if you and I were in a relationship with a man, we could make a promise to that person to focus our attention on them and to be faithful and loyal and to hold them as our one and only partner. But animals still have a strong instinct that works against that. So if you view the spay and neuter process as a sacred rite of passage, and if you meditate with them during the process, then the whole thing becomes sacred. And really what is happening is you're then purposely directing the animal's attention away from the instinct to mate towards a focus of their energy on you. And so it can be a really, really, to me, like a sacramental thing. But it takes attention and focus and a willingness to really be there, either literally like you do, or if you have to take your animal to the veterinarian to have that done, to make sure that you either sit in the waiting room, or sometimes my clients will sit in their car out in the parking lot while the surgery is being done, and they sit and they hold the violet flame and they pray and commune with that animal during the actual time that the surgery is happening.
Well, I don't want to actually go in there with them, but the vet comes to the house.
Yes, Iris is one of these really fortunate people that has a wonderful vet that comes to her house to do spay and neuter. What a blessing.
And he's a student at the Church of Religious Science.
There's a lot of people that would like to have him cloned.
Yeah. He's about as busy as you, too, Sharon.
I'll bet he is.
He is. Well, I guess I want to ask everyone to do that with me on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday at 11, between 11 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I Treasure has so much to give to the world, and he is just such a dear... I'll tell you what he does for me. He attunes me to the qualities, frequency, and vibration of heaven.
Yes.
Of the Ascended Master's octave. I mean, he really does that. And one day I was really ticked off about something that I thought I had a perfect right to be ticked off about, you know. A perfect right, and how could I be any other way? And I was just sort of huffing and puffing, and I completely forgot that that was my ego doing that, you know?
Right.
And I laid down where he was, and I was just going to rest because I was wearing myself out with it, you know. And when I laid down, he laid right against me, and he just exuded heaven,
yeah.
Heavenly, deep, profound peace and joy. And I said, would I rather have that or this thing that I've been doing? Duh. It wasn't a hard choice, you know?
And treasure is so, I mean, even for people that don't know him, if you were to just see him, he's just one of the most physically beautiful cats. He's just white like a cloud in a summer sky with blue eyes and a little tinge of gold on his ears and his tail. And he just takes your breath away. And sometimes, Iris, when I've been visiting and I look at him out in your yard at a distance, I mean, I literally can see like little wings.
I know.
It's so precious.
And when he walks, they foof out like little wings.
They do.
And he definitely thinks he can fly.
Oh, he does. He tries to demonstrate it. Sometimes a little clumsily.
So,
but he'll get the hang of it.
So you don't feel like he's in any danger on Wednesday?
Not if you and I and other people who are listening today will be willing to tune in Wednesday at 11 and hold a prayerful space for him. He'll be just fine.
Thank you, Sharon.
And I'd like all of our listeners to know, too, if they have a cat or dog that is going to be neutered or have any kind of surgery, if they let either of us know, we'll do the same for them.
Yes.
Anytime.
Absolutely. And also, I'm giving him the spay and neuter formula. In fact, I'm giving it to all of them. I've been putting it in all the waters around the house, and the other cats are going, uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Your turn, Signor.
Hope it's not me.
No, everybody else is fixed but him. They know. Oh, they're going, uh-oh.
We're
having spay and neuter.
That's another important point, too. What Iris is describing is using flower essences for treasure, for spay and neuter. And flower essences are vibrational preparations made from blossoms of flowering plants. And it sounds a little funny, but if you have a household where you have a number of cats or cats and dogs, and one of them is going to be spayed or neutered, it is the best thing to give them all the essence, because then even the ones that aren't having the surgery come into a harmonic resonance with the one that is having a surgery. And that's another one of the things that helps them get through it in good shape, is that it's like it brings the whole family, animals and people, together, and you can take a couple of drops yourself. And then everyone is vibrating together with the animal that's having the surgery. So it's a wonderful thing to do.
Well, I think I'm going to give some to my vet, too.
Good idea.
You'll probably just crack up. Okay.
I had one lady, Iris, who took the emotional balancing and healing spray in when her cat was having surgery, and she sprayed it on his bed, on her bed, and he was rather startled. He wasn't sure at first what she was doing.
I think I'll do that with mine. He really has a sense of humor. I told him, now he's taking all these classes at the Church of Religious Science, and I said, so, now you're the cosmic vet. And he goes, yep. And he's very, very sweet.
He must be. I can tell your kitties think it's about as good as it can get.
But they don't like him.
But they don't have to go anywhere either.
Yes, but, you know, they're notoriously ungrateful to him.
We'll make up for that.
But I've noticed they're notoriously ungrateful if you administer any kind of medication.
This is true. Especially kitties.
Yeah. Well, Sharon, back to motherhood. Do you have some more animal motherhood stories?
Well, you know, in an indirect way, I mean, again, when I think of animal mother stories, I tend to think in terms of the way that animals mother us. And one of the most touching stories I ever heard was a story from one of my clients about a neighbor of theirs who had a little girl, 7-year-old girl, that was dying from some rare form of leukemia. And so they'd done everything that they could do to treat her, and they had her at home. And they had gotten her a kitten to keep her company. And this little kitten, just, you know, 8 or 9 week old kitten, really literally kept a vigil on this child's bed. And every once in a while, the parents would feel that the cat should go outside for a while, so they'd toss the kitten outside. And right away, the kitten would run around to the window of the little girl's bedroom and literally throw itself against the window to get back inside. And even after the parents got tired and went to bed at night, the kitten kept the vigil on the little girl's bed, and she finally died. And within a couple of months, the cat actually died from the same form of leukemia, which was not the usual cat leukemia, but a very rare kind that cats don't usually get. So that little kitten was literally mothering that child so much that she literally took that vibration into her own body. I mean, just
she
an amazing sacrifice.
She tried to save her by taking some of it on, is what I get.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
And it's, I mean, I do encourage people always to spay and neuter their animals because it's such an important thing. But when I think back in my own life, I mean, one of the most joyful experiences I ever had as a child was when one of our kitties had a litter of kittens in my closet, and just watching how she cared for them. This was when I was 7 or 8 years old. Was just one of the most miraculous things ever. I mean, I literally watched them being born. And
isn't that the sweetest?
Oh, it's incredible. And how she washed each of them off and stimulated their little systems and purred the whole time and went without food for the longest time. I mean, absolutely and completely miraculous. I mean, I think that was one of the things that really set in my whole path of healing animals, was that one event of seeing that beautiful kitty with her babies in my closet.
Wow.
She just had 3 kittens, and she would put them in my shoes.
Oh.
It was like something out of a cartoon. I would look in there, and there'd be a little kitten in each shoe.
Is that our 2-minute, Dawn? Or do we have a caller?
It was a beep.
Sharon, can you see the time? Is that our 2 minutes?
It's 2:53, according to my
yep,
clock.
Yep, that's our 2 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Tell people how they can reach you, my darling. But first, I just want to say, you have been the conduit for so many miracles in my life and in the lives of people that I know and of conditions on earth. I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you with all my heart.
Oh, it's my great, great pleasure. And I'm happy to pray for anyone's animal that's undergoing surgery or is old or anything. So if anyone wants to contact me, it's Anna Flora, A-N-A-F-L-O-R-A, at Snowcrest, SNOWCREST.net.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you for being on. And people can contact me through bbsradio.com. And I just want to thank you for all you give and do and for the miracle you are on the planet. Thank you with all my heart, Sharon. God bless you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you to all our listeners.
Yes, and may all your dreams come true and be 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible.